Good morning, members. I'd like to call the meeting of the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. Today's date is Tuesday, March 14th. Representative Hornstein, before us, we have the minutes from March 9th. Would you move those minutes, please?
I would move the minutes from March 9th, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All those in favor of the minutes as presented signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are approved. Thank you, members. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Excellent.
The animals are always a hit, so thanks for bringing in the snake and the chinchilla. Just hope that when they're out in the hallway now, they're going to feed the snake. So. Poor little thing. So, yeah, just a short delay here, and then we'll be rolling. Okay, members, this morning we have three things on our agenda. We're going to start with the Minnesota Zoo. So, ladies, would you identify yourselves for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jane Prohaska, the Legislative Relations Officer at the Minnesota Zoo.
And I'm Mary Robinson, Chief Financial Officer at Minnesota Zoo.
Our director, John Fowley, sends his apologies. He wasn't able to come and make a presentation this morning. His mother-in-law passed away suddenly yesterday and had to attend to some family matters. So I want to give a quick...
Extend our sympathies to him, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to give a quick overview of the zoo with our request this year for our general fund appropriation. We're asking for $9,120,000 for fiscal year 18 and $9,223,000 for fiscal year 19, as recommended by Governor Dayton. With this appropriation from the general fund, it will allow the zoo to continue its sustainable public-private partnership. It's a budget and an appropriation that supports our mission and programs, but importantly, it also continues the current financially sustainable revenue mix of one-third of our general operating support from the state general fund and two-thirds of our operating revenues through earned revenues, charitable contributions, and other grants for special programs and projects. But just a little bit about the zoo to put our budget request in context. So we're still sometimes known as the new zoo, although we opened in 1978 and are almost 40 years old. We are a state agency, as some sometimes forget, but we're established in law as a public-private partnership with only a small portion of our budget coming from the state. We're governed by a zoo board, and we're supported by the Minnesota Zoo Foundation, which is a separate 501c3 public charity that provides us with significant financial support. The state investment with our earned revenues and coupled with private contributions does allow the zoo to really be a world-class zoo. We're one of the five largest zoos in the country with more than 5,300 animals, only a few of which you saw this morning. And we have miles and miles of roads, acres of parking lots, and importantly, 485 acres of land, which allows the zoo to really expand its programs, its projects, and establish exhibits that meets today's animal husbandry standards. The zoo is also an economic engine for the state. We have 1.3 million guests annually, and the guests, along with all that comes with that many people coming out to Apple Valley, it results in $146 million annual impact, as demonstrated by a study completed by the University of Minnesota. It supports 1,700 jobs, and importantly, for every dollar invested by the state, there's a $14 economic return. Our mission, quite simply, is to connect people, animals, and the natural world to save wildlife. And how do we meet our mission through our programs? Importantly, we are the state zoo, and we're very cognizant of that, and we do all that we can to make sure that all Minnesotans have access to the zoo. Zoo Unlimited is a new program that was established this year to expand the zoo's efforts to make sure that there aren't barriers to admission to the zoo, whether those barriers be geographic or background or economic. In particular, the Free to Explore program is a new iteration of our program to make sure that those of Minnesotans who are economically disadvantaged have free access to the zoo. The program allows access to the zoo not by one day, a month being able to come to the zoo or having to get tickets in advance, but simply by showing your identification that you are already enrolled in another public assistance program in the state of Minnesota. You can come to the zoo at any time. And with that program in place, it really has expanded the number of folks who have been able to come to the zoo for free. As Director John Frawley says, our zoo is free for those who need it to be free. And it's an important aspect of our programming that we're working on carrying forward.
Representative Johnson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for sharing that. You know, it's a commitment I share that all kids have a shot at these sorts of opportunities. I'm curious, children from the Twin Cities who don't have automobiles, are they able to get a bus out there, or city bus?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there really is a direct bus from the Mall of America to the zoo. So if you can get on light rail to Mall of America, you can get on a bus and come to the zoo. We also have about 70,000 plus Minnesota students that come on field trips to the zoo. Many of those field trips are underwritten by corporate contributions, and as a result, those students can come to the zoo for free as well.
Representative Johnson, follow up. Okay. Proceed, please.
Zoomobile, as you just saw, takes the zoo to those who can't come to the zoo. And last year alone, the Zoomobile went to 42 counties in Minnesota, introduced 54,000 people to our really engaging animals, and logged over 32,000 miles. There is a map in your materials that shows all of the counties that the Zoomobile visits, including all the way up in the northwest corner, as well as around the metropolitan area and throughout the state.
Mr. Pohaska, I do have one comment on your map. Was it about a year and a half ago, there was an article in the Washington Post, I believe it was, and the person that wrote the article said that Red Lake County was the worst county in the nation to live in. And I noticed there's no dots on Red Lake County here. I'm wondering if you've been reading their columns, or I'm being facetious, obviously. Teasing a little bit.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are well aware of the fact that we don't have a dot in Red Lake County. education, I think some folks may not be aware of the scope of our education programs at the zoo. We are, in fact, the state's largest environmental learning center. We have 450,000 participants each year in our various educational programs. 90,000 have participants in school programs. About 70,000 of those are Minnesotans, but we even get school children coming to our zoo from Iowa and Wisconsin. We even have 5,000 children registered in our zoo camps, which we now offer not just during the summertime, but when school is out on spring break and even some of the long weekends, so that children have an opportunity to come to programs at the zoo. Recreation, I think most people think of zoos first. They think of recreation. And zoos really are, especially the Minnesota Zoo with its space and its trails, is a really safe place for families to come and play in the natural world, not just to look at the habitats for our animals, but also just enjoy the sites itself. And importantly, part of our mission is not just to connect people, animals, and the natural world, but it is ultimately to save wildlife. The zoo is heavily involved and always has been, was designed to be involved in conservation programs, both here in Minnesota with moose research and returning bison to Minnesota State Parks, but also around the world, including tiger research and working with wild dogs, among other projects that we engage in. These are the kinds of programs that are supported by our operating budget. Our proposed budget for fiscal 18 is $27,540,000, with a slight increase in fiscal 19. As you can see, by far the largest part of our budget does relate to salaries and related benefits. Animal food, supplies, materials come in second. We also have purchase services using Minute with IT, and then do purchase some outside services for skills that we don't have in-house. Our core operating costs really are the care and continual care and feeding of our animal collection, and our 24/7 safety and security of our animals and our guests. But as I've mentioned, programs really relate to staffing, and that is what our budget is about. But importantly, on any given day, it costs the same to operate the zoo for 1,000 guests or 10,000 guests. We really have an inelastic budget. We really can't stop some of the activity, regardless of whether it's the middle of winter and folks aren't coming to visit, or whether it's a really busy day in the summer. Our operating costs are increasing, particularly salaries. Medical insurance and pension contributions in particular are leading to projected increases in both fiscal 18 and fiscal 19. Utility costs are also predicted to go up, and of course just general inflationary costs for the other portions of our budget. Our revenues, as mentioned earlier, we do have a diverse source of funding with about 32% of our requested, our proposed budget is a request from the general fund, and about 53% is from earned revenues, 6% from charitable contributions, and then the remaining from other grants and operating grants and support. We are requesting a slight increase from our base from 2 years ago. This increase really is primarily related to salaries and related benefits, and it does allow us to maintain the recently reestablished balance in our budget of one-third of our support from our general operating fund appropriations. And it allows us to be fiscally responsible given these anticipated cost increases. The zoo is also committed to raising funds from other sources, not just from the general fund. We are working to increase earned revenues. We have recently hired a new chief, a deputy director, excuse me, whose background is in business, looking for ways to increase revenue and increase audiences, such as finding things that will encourage adults to come to the zoo. We recently implemented Adults Night Out, which has been hugely successful, bringing in a population that might not normally come to the zoo. And coupled with Adults Night Out, we've been doing a conservation speaker series to both make sure that folks have access to some really good speakers about conservation issues, particularly those related to here in Minnesota. We're also looking at ways to bring in teenagers and older children that might fall off the scales when it comes to coming to the zoo throughout their lifetime. We're also looking at increasing contributed income, particularly by looking to maintain our 44-member households for a longer period of time. That's a huge source of revenue for the zoo, and we want to look at ways to continue to expand that contributed income. In short, with doing all of these things, we think we will have the zoo that is sustainable for the next 40 years. We are a leading family destination for family recreation. We're a leading provider of environmental education. We're a conservation leader on many issues and an economic engine. So we think that the zoo is important to Minnesota and look forward to the committee supporting our budget request.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the excellent presentation. On your slide, core operating costs, that it said on the bottom, on a given day it costs the same to operate the zoo for 1,000 guests or 10,000 guests. On a typical peak summer weekend, how many guests do you have?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we may have a 10,000 visitor day is a good day. We have done more than that. We have done 15,000. I think that's it's unusual to get higher than that, I must admit, on a weekend day. In the winter, it can be, especially on a cold winter weekday, it can be fewer than 1,000.
Thank you. Mr. Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, members? Can you, for the benefit of the committee, on page 4, the bottom left-hand, your proposed budget for fiscal year 18 and a slight increase for 19, can you provide for us what it was in fiscal year 16 and 17 and then 18 and then show with 19 so we have a sequence of what we're doing? If I've missed that someplace in the presentation, I apologize, but I don't see those numbers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can give you the exact detail on what our budget has been over the last few years. In fiscal 16 and 17, our budget was approximately $24.5 million and $26.5 million. Our general fund appropriation was $8.25 million, and with the other sources of revenue sorting out at the same approximate level. The budget was not much larger than that going back to fiscal 14 and fiscal 15 because we had some difficulties, particularly in FY15, in large part that related to a drop in the general fund support and then a particularly difficult climate year with polar vortex, a wet summer, and so our earned revenues were down. So 2 years ago, the committee and the legislature relooked at our entire budget structure and gave us an increase to the one-third of our general operating budget as a sort of standard going forward. It had been that in prior years, prior to fiscal 14 and 15.
Anything else, members? Okay. Any further testimony? Do you have any?
Thank you very much for your time this morning. Yeah. Thank you for letting us bring in our friends.
Yeah, thank you for bringing them.
Next up, Mr. Edmond, Explore Minnesota.
It'll just be a minute, members, to get the PowerPoint hooked up. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, as long as we're filling space, you know, often we hear connections to your district or to the range, and I found out a couple things in the last week that Representative Bliss grew up in South St. Paul, as did Mr. Edmond, or I believe, right?
Yes, my mother grew up in South St. Paul. Yes, very much.
So there's connections everywhere.
Isn't that even the Concordia connection was here this morning? Okay, so with that, Ms. Edmond, would you identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Certainly. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is John Edmond. I'm the director of Explore Minnesota Tourism. Appreciate the opportunity here to present an overview of our agency and our proposed budget for the next biennium. I think you should have a copy of my complete presentation in your packet. I'm not going to go through every slide here in the interest of time. But what I wanted to do is just kind of give you a little basic foundation of our industry, a little bit about what our budget has been like historically, what the governor is proposing, and then a little bit of, about some of the marketing that we're planning to do, that we have done and we're planning to do this year. Just to kind of give you all a little bit of a foundation about travel and tourism. Travel and tourism is a huge industry in the state of Minnesota, as you know. It's a $14 billion industry affecting every county in the state of Minnesota, over $930 million in terms of revenue to the state, and 260,000 jobs. And those are just those direct jobs related to the leisure and hospitality industry. We're an industry that's impacted all season long. We think about tourism primarily in the summer months, but it's also very big, as this chart shows, in the fall, winter, as well as in the spring. So it affects every part of the state all year long. This slide here kind of gives you a little bit of what the growth has been in our industry over the last 10 years, from $11 billion in 2007 to $14 billion industry today. Our sales tax has generated from leisure and hospitality industry and has grown from $679 million to $930 million in 2015, and these are the latest years for which this information is available. Jobs have been relatively flat over this period of time due to a lot of innovations and changes in our industry as well, but we're at about 260,000 jobs right now. This slide here I think is important because our industry is very dependent upon people staying and lodging, hotels, resorts, bed and breakfasts, and the revenue that has been generated from year over year in terms of room revenue has increased every year since 2009. And that's really important. I think what that reflects is the fact that consumers are willing to spend a little bit more for a quality vacation experience. The lodging properties have been able to charge a little bit more and to increase their financial health. But that's just a background about our industry. As an agency, Explore Minnesota, our mission is basically to facilitate travel to and within the state of Minnesota. We have sort of a vision of a goal to become a $20 billion industry by the year 2020. We're a relatively small agency. We're a non-cabinet level agency, 46 full-time employees with offices all throughout the state. We also manage state travel information centers, and we're organized basically into three broad units. It's also worth noting that we are guided by an Explore Minnesota Tourism Council, which is an advisory council. It's a 28-person council made up of representatives of all aspects of our industry, from hotels and chambers and resorts, as well as four legislators, two from each body, helping to advise us on those matters. And Representative Bliss is one of the recent members of this council. There's probably more information in this slide here than you can probably read from this, but this just shows you how we're structured. And one of the things that I think is probably worth noting here is that we are definitely not top heavy at all. We have just three primary units: brand strategy, industry relations, and business operations. Our strategic plan, I think it's worth noting something about our strategic plan, is that we did this 2 years ago, and we're very metric-driven. We really had set some targets on what we want to achieve as an agency. We basically have goals to drive economic vitality. This is a two-year goal to generate sales of $15.2 billion, to create innovative marketing. We measure our marketing. Are we having an effect? To provide excellent customer service, and based on a lot of surveys of the consumers that touch Explore Minnesota. Enhance industry relations, because we really have to be connecting with the industry in every corner of the state of Minnesota. We want to make sure that we are reaching out to them. And increasing consumer engagement, we basically have a goal to provide 3.2 million, to service 3.2 million customers annually through a variety of different means. Now, when it gets to our budget, our current budget is about, for the biennium, is a $28 million budget. We also generate revenue from the private sector as well to support that. And we partner with organizations all throughout the state to extend that reach of those dollars. This chart kind of shows you roughly a breakdown of how our budget is, and we really try to take any resources that the legislature appropriates to get it into the marketplace to attract visitors to the state of Minnesota. The majority of the dollars go to marketing and communications. Technology is a very important part of how we interact and engage with consumers. Market development, what that really means is group travel and international travel as well. Welcome centers, industry outreach, and we do provide a small amount of partnership grants. These are very small little grants of about $8,000. This is the max to go out to help support local community marketing efforts. Earlier in the previous testimony, there was a question about budget historically. This gives you an idea of what our budget for Explore Minnesota Tourism has been historically. We've been relatively flat over the last two bienniums. We did receive a pretty good increase in 14-15, but we had two consecutive bienniums where we did experience declines from the previous years. Now, in terms of what the governor is proposing in our budget and adding to our base, the majority of what he's proposing is one-time appropriations. He's proposing $2 million to expand global awareness, basically marketing domestically as well as internationally. $1 million for technology. We really need to interact with consumers in different ways than we did 10 years ago, and technology is an important part of that. And also to continue a major new event program. There's also a request for an operating adjustment, and the continuation of the carry forward. I'm just going to talk about these very, very briefly in more detail. You can read it, and you can certainly ask me any questions about it. But in terms of the initiative to expand global awareness, it's basically to focus both on our target markets, our expansion markets, and also increase media and trade in international markets, as well as to leverage increased social marketing. Technology, I mentioned that. Basically, we want to keep pace with other technologies, with things like virtual reality, mobile devices. That's where we're seeing our primary growth of people touching Explore Minnesota is through mobile technology. We want to explore 3D browsing technologies as well as some personalization tools. And this events program I want to mention, this is something the legislature provided us dollars for as a pilot program last year. It was a $600,000 program to help support and attract new events to the state of Minnesota that haven't otherwise been here for the last 3 years. And that program has been successful in supporting large and small events all across the state of Minnesota, whether it be smaller events in communities from Grand Marais, Duluth, Rochester, as well as larger events here in the Twin Cities, and this is something that the governor has proposed to continue during the next biennium.
Representative Eklund has a question.
Certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you talk about the maximizing emerging technologies and others. There's an effort up in called the Heart of the Continent through Nat Geo, or is Explore Minnesota working with that group at all, or as far as for international trade and destination type places?
Ms. Bedman.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we are working with the Heart of the Continent, and we're working with that's a program between the United States as well as Canada, and to promote that part of the U.S. They did some programs with the National Geographic. We really need to partner as much as possible, and particularly on the international front. We do promote programs in the Great Lakes states. We do programs in the Sierra River states to increase the awareness. We don't have the resources to do things on our own, so partnerships like that are very important.
Okay, proceed, please. I'm sorry. Representative Back.
Yeah, Chair. Would it be possible to get a list of those new events?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Certainly,
just a simple email would do.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
The operating adjustment is basically a small adjustment, less than 1% of our total biennial budget. We do try to make sure that any resources we do receive, as I mentioned earlier, get into the marketplace. So for administrative overhead is relatively small. And then also the governor proposing a reinstatement of the Explore Minnesota's carry forward authority. This is something that we had about 4 years ago that was taken away, but it's very helpful for us as an agency when we're like within the summer months and we have to respond to different marketing programs. We want to make sure those dollars are not lost and used as was intended. This slide here is interesting to me. And perhaps to you, because you see a lot of competition in this state from other destinations. I know it's not all about money, but we're seeing destinations from the Michigans and the Missouris and the Colorados to compete for market share for our travelers in Minnesota, and we need to remain competitive. This is our competitive set. We're about 22nd overall in the country right now in terms of total tourism budget. But if you look at our competitive set, we are below the Michigans, Missouris, Colorados, Montanas, Wisconsin. South Dakota is actually shown slightly below us, but they rely on statewide lodging tax, so they're on an automatic increase. We have to make the case to you, the legislature, every year that we are doing our job and that we need it to compete. But this gives you a pretty good idea of what some of our competition is doing. Now, just to kind of give you a brief, and I'll go through this quickly. I'm not going to go through our entire campaigns, but I wanted to give you an idea of how we market the state. And what we found through our research is that, and perhaps you have as well, is that when people travel here, they're amazed about what Minnesota has to offer, the lakes, the rivers, the natural resources, the cities, but they just don't know what we have. So we began in this campaign a couple of years ago focusing on things that are only in Minnesota. we don't really have a product problem. We had an awareness problem. And this, we wanted to use this hashtag to really tell consumers in our target markets and throughout the world what is unique to the state. So we wanted to basically help travelers plan vacations and create memories that last a lifetime. This is one of the first spots that we did on this campaign to give you an idea of how we're positioning the state.
Take a trip. Take the train, the car, take some bikes. Take the kids, these kids, that kid. Okay, you can come too. Head east, head west, head north. Nope, go back. That's Canada. Go up, have a ball, or a few, maybe a few more. Looking good, real good. Hey, that was cool. Have a dinner. And there. And there. Really relax. Amazing. Oh, they save some seats. Great seats. Good laugh. Good times. Good night. Whoa, get up. Put your pedals. Put your paddle. Put your camera. Come on, get your clothes on. Okay, where's the lake? Where's the museum? Where's the beach? Found it. Run. Swim. Climb. Snap. Whirl. Dive. Tune out. Smile. Laugh. Love. Take a trip and remember your day. Only in Minnesota.
And so, Mr. Chairman, members, that was a campaign that we did to start the Only in Minnesota effort. We had other versions of that. But we really wanted to drive interest, not only through that. Television's actually still important. It's very expensive, but it's a less than, it's probably about a third of our overall budget. We do a lot in digital efforts to reach consumers as well. But beyond that campaign, we decided that we needed to evolve it a little bit. There is a lot of different imagery of Minnesota. We talked about the things that are only in Minnesota. But we needed to slow it down a little bit, go from depth to breadth. Basically, we had activities overload. We had too many things on there. And we wanted to get to fewer places with richer experiences. So we evolved the campaign this last year. We did three additional spots, legendary moments, measure your moments, and one called She Belongs to You. And I just wanted to show you one of them that we were showing this last summer.
Our favorite moments aren't measured in time. They're measured in belly aches, the number of tangles in your hair, constellations, moons, claws, butterflies, and bravery. Measure your moments differently. Only in Minnesota.
So that's the campaign that we did last summer, and we did an RFP to contract with someone to evaluate the effectiveness of the campaign. And what we were basically, we looked at is, did people take a trip that they otherwise would not have taken without touching Explore Minnesota in some ways, and what is the economic impact of that? And we show the incremental trips, visitors, spending, and taxes that's generated for a bottom line return on investment of 9 to 1 for the dollars that we invested and come back to the state. We also do surveys periodically. We ask the industry, you know, how was the summer, how was their season, how does it compare to previous years? And one question that I wanted to share is their current financial health. And this was just done last fall, showing that a majority show that their financial health is growing, stable, but positive. So when we get to our current year, and I just want to wrap it up here, and our 2017 campaign, we're focusing on Minnesota, surrounding states, also the expansion markets that you may have noticed in the ROI study are the Chicago's, Kansas City's, and Denver's. But this is, we're using a lot of different tactics, television, print, out of home, social. Social is very, very big in terms of how we're interacting with consumers. It's not just, you know, doing a direct mail piece, doing a print guide and asking people to order it. You have to interact with them, engage with them through a wide variety of different mediums, and social is one where we really put a lot of emphasis. We're redoing our website just in terms of a facelift for this summer. And we do a lot of partnerships because we can't do it alone, and we do partnerships promoting skiing, fishing, meeting, biking, sports, all throughout Minnesota, and those are a key part of how we attract visitors. And so the last video that I want to show you, and I'll just wrap up my presentation.
Yeah, and then we have a question from before, Representative Becker-Finn.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
That's okay.
Representative.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to bring you back to page 17. Can't really let this one go, but the She Belongs to You is quite problematic as an ad campaign. So we might want to revisit dropping that as I'm seeing a lot of nods from women in the audience. I don't think that's a message that we want to be sending. So just I had to point it out because I'm guessing no women were likely involved with putting that theme together. Because it just does not send the message that I think we want to be sending about Minnesota. So, thank you.
Mr. Edmund. Yeah, I'm Mr. Chair, Representative. That was actually just a working title that never appeared anywhere. It was just the idea from a, because a lot of women do make many decisions on travel. There was sort of just a representation of it from a woman's perspective. On that's one of several spots that we did this year, but the term never really ever appeared anywhere She Belongs to You.
And Mr. Chair, and I would say that even I'm glad that that language was not used, but the idea is still problematic, and I appreciate that you're trying to market to women, but a woman she belonging to somebody else is not the way that you market to women. So I just would encourage you to maybe branch out with who you're talking to about how we market things to women, because that does not send the message that I think you want to send to me, and I'm guessing a lot of other women that also love Minnesota and you might be trying to reach. So thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Edmund? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the presentation. Thanks for what you do. I'm curious how your agency interfaces with the concept of agricultural tourism, and if you have any endeavors in that area.
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yep, agricultural tourism is very big, particularly internationally. People are very interested in that tourism experience, as well as people from urban cultures as well. We do some programs with the Department of Agriculture. We do some programs in terms of some tours that we work with some tour operators in developing some of that. Rural Minnesota is extremely important to how we market the state because consumers are looking for those real, authentic experiences like that. And that's one of the things that I think that's so great about marketing this state. We don't have Disney World. We don't have mountains. We don't have oceans. But what we have is incredibly unique in this state. And those are the types of things that we're trying to bring out, because whether it's domestically or internationally, travelers are looking for those real type experiences. And agricultural tourism is obviously a big part of our product in the state and a very big part of how we want to also market beyond just the woods, water, as well as the urban experiences.
Representative Johnson, follow-up. Okay, Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, I'm on the short chair today, so I'm going to try and sit up straight.
You do the short straw.
Do the short straw. Question that's maybe not so related to this committee, but might be related to other committees, but I'm just really curious. You talked about the fact that people don't pick up a brochure and send in a card and, you know, in the old days and get the travel brochure back in the mail. Instead, social media is kind of the method of marketing. And I know resorts in my area that I've talked to that are very fortunate to have broadband early on say, you know, they oftentimes never see their customer now until they show up, because they make their choice online, they book online, and then they show up. It's a new world. My question to you is, what is the status out there in resort land, in the tourism? Are people still struggling with broadband, or are they well-equipped, because I think it's really important to tourism across the state.
Mr. Edmonds.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, there was a couple different ways I can answer that. One is from the consumer perspective, when you're looking to attract the consumers from the urban areas that have the broadband, that have the access, that is not as much the problem. The problem is more on the destination side. When they're looking to maintain their business, to interact with consumers, but it's also an interesting thing that some resorts are actually priding themselves of not having that access to provide that opportunity for consumers to get away from it all, put your cell phones on off and not be interacted. So it is a problem, but in some ways it's also an opportunity for the perspective of some resorts.
Representative Lehman.
Okay. Thank you. I'm surprised to hear that, but I suppose that's the case. People like to turn off. So you don't see broadband as a barrier to tourism in Minnesota?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chair, Representative, broadband access is important for every business in the state of Minnesota, including tourism, and it needs to be accessible and available in all communities throughout the state. Our industry is no exception to any other business.
Thank you.
Okay, good.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just quickly wrap up,
you bet.
And if there's any other questions, I just wanted to show this one last spot, and we are going to be, you know, rotating this along with some of the other spots that we have done this last year. But right now in Minnesota, it's a rather unique time. There's a lot of high-profile events that are going on, starting with the Ryder Cup last year, and continuing on with the X Games and the Super Bowl and the Final Four. But it's not just those events, those bigger events in the larger urban areas. It's the smaller events in communities like Duluth and Northfield and Brainerd, et cetera. So there's really a sort of a unique focus on events, which is putting this state on a bit of a world stage that we haven't had for a long time. So there is going to be a bit of an event focus. Small events, large events, all throughout Minnesota, and that's what this spot here tries to represent.
It's in the air, on the breeze, in the hush, in the roar. There's something happening here. Don't miss a second. Only in Minnesota.
So, Mr. Chair, that pretty much concludes my presentation. If there's any further questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay. Member questions? All righty.
Senator Dean. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know there's a group working in the state right now to attract the World's Fair in a few years. Are you involved in those discussions?
Mr. Edmund.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. I've been involved with those discussions for several years now, because I think that is another one of those high-profile events that can help provide global attention to the state. There's some challenges. I don't know how many details you want to get into right now, but there are some challenges with that. The United States has to become a member of the Bureau of International Exhibitions. It's requiring federal action. That hopefully will happen soon. And then Minnesota is one of three total bids. There's two others that's competing for this is one of the smaller World's Fairs. And so we're doing everything we can to help support that bid.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of real quick questions, and you may want to get back to me, but obviously I'm an avid outdoorsman, do a lot of fishing and hunting and snowmobiling and ATVing and so forth. But how do you interact with, say, DNR to bring more people from out of state to get involved in our what I call casting and blasting sports and snowmobiling and ATVing?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, when I look at the research as to why people travel to the state of Minnesota, outdoors is, our natural resources is one of the main draws. That's consistent in all of the research that we said. People know about this state, and they're attracted to the state because of the lakes and the rivers and the prairies and the opportunities for wildlife and habitat and trails of all kinds. So that's a key part of how we position the state. And then we have several partnerships with the Department of Natural Resources promoting things like the ATV trail, promoting fishing, promoting bass fishing. We do partnership with them in terms of the openers, the fishing opener, the pheasant opener, and the deer hunter opener. And we do work with the zoo, and we work with the Historical Society, and we work with the Department of Transportation and even the Department of Health. Probably the one agency we work with more than anyone else is the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of following up on that, Mr. Edmund, it seems that certain trends occur with history, that there seems to be a lot of interest now, like in F. Scott Fitzgerald. Sinclair Lewis's books are suddenly popular again. And how do you work with the Historical Society? I know we had discussed that the 100th anniversary of the first vote for women's suffrage after the amendment had passed was in South St. Paul. How do you work with local governments or the Historical Society when suddenly there are these anniversaries or interests that come with famous Minnesotans from the past?
Mr. Edmund.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, as I kind of alluded to, we have a pretty significant partnership with the Minnesota Historical Society to join together, find out where our mutual goals. We both invest resources into various campaigns to bring out a lot of those historic sites and the historic events throughout the state of Minnesota. And I'd be happy to get you more details about that partnership, but in terms of a lot of the local events and sites, a lot of we do that in a wide array of different ways. We have vehicles such as our publications like the Minnesota Explorer, a lot of our electronic communications. We get those messages out to consumers, emails, etc. And one of the biggest things that we do is through social media. When we find out about a particular local event, but kind of by a local community, that information gets fed up to us, and then we try to position that within our editorial calendar to reach out to consumers in that regard. And one other thing we are doing this year, too, is we plan on doing a lot of live Facebook feeds of different local events and things like that. And so we're still working on our calendar, a schedule for that, but if you see, if any of your members see any local events that you'd like us to bring out through our various channels, we'd be more than happy to do that.
We have one more. Representative
Hoppe. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Edmund, we had the biggest sporting event in the world last year happen in Minnesota. Did we notice any uptick in tourism from anywhere in the world, especially from Europe?
Mr. Edmund.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hoppe, yes, we did. We have, in fact, I can also get for you some statistics on not just the media impressions, but the uptick in hotel occupancy throughout the state during that week, which surpassed significantly before. There's various studies that we had not necessarily authored showing the economic impact immediately of the Ryder Cup, which is in and of itself very positive. But from as the tourism director, the thing that I was most impressed with the Ryder Cup is how Minnesota showed on a global stage. We were very fortunate about the weather that we received during that particular event, but we showed very well, and there were people all throughout the globe looking at Minnesota saying that there's something going on here, and we are actually hoping to continue to use that in our various promotions, particularly internationally, for the next year or several. So the benefits of this thing for the Ryder Cup, I think, is not just that week, but it'll be for hopefully for years to come.
Thank you.
Representative Hoppe? And to that point of some of the largest events in the world, Mr. Edmund, in the hockey world, one of, if not the largest event, is the World Juniors. Are we ever in the running for hosting a World Junior tournament here?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I'm not sure I can answer that. A lot of those bids come from the local communities that we help support. There may be some. I know we're always looking for those types of events, but hockey is obviously one of those things that are very big. Not just the juniors, the WCHA, you know, events, the local events, Hockey Day in Minnesota, and that's something that we're very big on trying to support and continue to promote.
Thank you. All right. Well, there's no other questions. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you,
members. Next up, we've got the Met Council with their Metro Regional Parks and Trails presentation. Okay. Here we go. Ready to represent the Hornstein?
Next council.
All right. All right. Welcome to the committee, and would you please identify yourselves for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Fabian. I'm Emmett Mullen, and I am from the Metropolitan Council. I'm the manager of the Regional Parks Unit. Thank you for the opportunity to present today to the committee the operation and maintenance request for the coming biennium. Just as a reminder, I was here last Tuesday with the Department of Natural Resources in Greater Minnesota presenting the Parks and Trails Legacy Recommendation, the 40-40-20 split. And thank you again for hearing that recommendation. Why we're here today is operation and maintenance funding for the Metropolitan Regional Park System. Our request today is part of the governor's 18-19 budget, and I'm presenting today with my colleagues, former State Senator Claire Roebling from Scott County. She's currently the communications director there, and Marty Walsh, the Carver County Parks Director. So on behalf of the Metropolitan Council and the 10 regional park implementing agencies, thanks for hearing our request today. The Metropolitan Parks System is a nationally renowned system. It's made up of 54 regional parks and park reserves, over 360 miles of regional trails, and with over 54,000 acres of parkland. In 2015, we had over 47 million visits to the system, and just having heard Explore Minnesota go, the regional park system is oftentimes the backdrop for a lot of their promotion of our state, because it really is one of the reasons this state is such a great place to live. The regional parks system, the Metropolitan Regional Park System, really serves as the state parks of the metropolitan area. It was created back in 1974 by the state legislature when they were concerned about the rapid growth and urbanization going on throughout the seven-county metro area. The legislature acted. They created the Metropolitan Regional Parks Act, and the act directed the Metropolitan Council to identify the lands that would then make up the system, which together with the state parks and trails would meet the recreational needs of Minnesotans. By 2040, this system is expected to grow to over 70,000 acres with more than 1,100 miles of regional trails. So it's a significant system. Again, the state of Minnesota, it provides funding for the Metropolitan Regional Park System from four sources. Today, the reason we're here is to talk about the appropriation for operation and maintenance funding. With little exception, the state appropriation for operation and maintenance funding has varied little over the past 15 years. Again, the governor's budget includes stable funding for the coming biennium, a total of $8.54 million for each year of the biennium. With this, I'm going to pass it over to my colleague, Claire Roblin.
Senator, welcome.
Thank you, members.
Good to see you.
And good morning. I just wanted to talk about this slide a little bit. As you can see, the bottom line is very flat, and the operational costs are going up all the time as new acreage and new programming and new needs to maintain these facilities continues to rise. And we see that the general fund appropriation is only 2.8% of the total cost of the 10 implementing agencies' costs. And it's we were fortunate to get some additional money at one point in the lottery in lieu from the Environmental Trust Fund. And that was to try and bring us up to the 40% that was promised at one time for operations and maintenance of these parks. We're at about 8.5% right now. And so a long ways from the 40%. Aside from the governor's proposal, we do have the 10 agencies did put in a request. Representative Hoppe has the bill for $20 million in funding that would include the lottery in lieu, but that would give us about 20% trying to move toward that 40% that is in state statute that is to be our goal. But I just wanted to point out how flat that has been over the years from the general fund, and that is the current governor's request. But the implementing agencies just want to let you know that there is definitely a much greater need and there is a greater obligation in this current state statute.
Thank you.
Marty, did you want to add anything?
Yes. Mr. Chair, Marty Walsh with Carver County. Just to interpret a little bit with regards to what Emmett and Claire have shared, the regional park system at 54,000 acres, I don't know if many of you have an idea of what that is, but in square miles, that's 84.4 square miles of regional parks and trail areas that we have. With regards to trails, we now maintain about 360 miles of trail. If you were to string that together, you could go from here to Milwaukee, or you could be just shy of going from here to Omaha, Nebraska. So a significant length of trails that we are maintaining. And then it was mentioned with regards to the number of people that we have attending our park areas, that again, to interpret that, 47 million is a bunch. But to relay that, that's more than double what Yellowstone, Yosemite, Grand Canyon, and Lake Mead get for attendance. It's also eight times greater than the home attendance of the Vikings games, mm-hmm. the Wolves, the Wild, the Lynx, and the annual attendance to the State Fair, to kind of give you a perspective on the number of people that are coming to our system. The operations and maintenance funding really is kind of our bread and butter, if you will, with regards to our services. It is the time needed for us to provide maintenance in our park areas to maintain sanitary conditions. It's the time for the safety inspections for playgrounds. It's our utility bills. It's building maintenance. It's painting. It's new roofs. It's snow plowing and ski trail grooming. It's seasonal jobs for lifeguards, park attendants, and grounds care people. It's the installation and removal of fishing docks and piers. It's fuel to operate our vehicles. It's the repairs for those vehicles and the replacement. It's service and things that we don't often think of, like septic system pumping. It's guest services of reserving picnic shelters and camping reservations. It's also the instructors that are used for outdoor education and recreation programs. Mr. Chair, that's fine.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh, I couldn't help but hear comments about Milwaukee and Omaha being 360 miles from here. Just so you know, it's 360 miles to Roseau from here. So,
Mr. Chair, I apologize for not including.
Need to know your audience.
At least the chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with that wraps up our presentation today. We would be happy to answer any questions if we're able.
Sure. And Senator Roebling, when the promise was made, I wasn't here. So.
I wasn't either, actually. Okay. That was a long
time ago. Yeah. Members, any questions or comments? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, looking at that chart on the costs versus appropriations, it seems to be quite a widening gap. How do we deal with that? I mean, how can we possibly?
Well, there's, Representative Hansen, there's only two ways. Either the top line comes down or the bottom line goes up. I don't know.
Well, it's quite a, Mr. Chair, that's kind of what we're here for. So yep. Are you going to cut or are you going to raise dollars? How are we going to meet those things? Because it appears, you know, when you look at the context, the significant economic impact that the Metro Regional Park System has for service and for providing jobs, but also helping out with the economy. So this clearly isn't sustainable with the cost versus appropriations. So, you know, either in the short term or the long term, what are we going to do?
Mr. Mullen.
Chair Fabian, Representative Hansen, that's a good question. The way that our park agencies come up with to fill the gap in operational costs is it's generally property taxes as well as fees to the parks.
And Representative Hansen, so if we continue to have fees go up, then that may price out people participating. If we go on the property taxes, then we have the local property tax payers paying for a regional or statewide significant effort. So it doesn't quite seem fair if we have the complete burden placed on the property taxpayers in those localities when clearly there's a regional or statewide benefit that's coming from the from these parks.
Mr. Mullen?
Hi. Thank you, Chair and Representative Hansen.
We do have concerns, of course, about the property taxes and the implications that has on our residents in our counties or in the park districts or wherever. You know, the lottery in lieu helped a little bit at one point, and so that brought us up to that about 8.5-9% amount. But as the park use continues to grow, as populations in the area continue to grow, and even the amount of trails, they all need to be repaired, and pavilions need to be reshingled, and there's a lot of things going on. And we certainly want to encourage those activities. We want people out in the parks. We know that's good for their health and their spirit, actually, just to get out in the outdoors. We all know how valuable and precious that is. And so that's one of the reasons we did put in that additional bill from the 10 agencies to request some more general fund money. And, you know, we are hopeful. I know, you know, when I was finance chair in 2011, we had a $5 billion deficit, and we couldn't give any more money to projects like this at that time. And we're just hopeful that maybe with a little better outlook that might be a possibility.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On another subject, is that all right?
What happens if I say no?
Don't do it.
Proceed, please.
Thank you. When DNR comes up and we visit, one of the questions I ask them is how they are trying to connect their trails to the metropolitan trails. So Minnesotans have a chance to come from out in on their bikes or walking or however they're choosing to do it. And similarly, that folks...
Can you speak into the microphone, please, Representative Wagner? Yes.
So that folks in the metro have a chance to go out. And particularly when you're seeing younger families now that have want to take the kids and actually go camping outside the metropolitan area, and they can actually go out. But we don't have those trails connections. Is that on your radar screen?
To the testifiers.
Chair Fabian, Representative Wagenius, the connecting of the regional trail system to the state trail system as well as the greater Minnesota regional trail system is on our radar, and there are concerted efforts going on throughout the periphery of our system. I can point to one, but Marty would probably be a better person to talk about this, but there's a Crow River regional trail that actually, it begins just in the northern parts of Carver County. It goes then through largely Hennepin County, but then it goes along the Crow River, and it weaves between Hennepin County and Wright County. And this is a coordinated effort with the Greater Minnesota Regional Park System. I also know that the Dakota Rail Trail is one that that originates through western Hennepin County, and it also then further extends into McLeod County all the way to Hutchinson. There are these connections being made, and I think that I know the Loose Line is one that's managed by both the Metropolitan Regional Park System as well as the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. There's a number of examples. Marty, I don't know
Mr.
if you
Walsh. Can
add.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on a local level from Carver County's perspective, we have a couple of state trails that are either in Carver County or border Carver County. One is the Loose Line Trail. So our master plan and was just recently completed with Three Rivers Park District, which includes not only Carver County, but Wright County, as well as the Three Rivers Park District. And it's a short section, the connection into Carver County to the Loose Line Trail. So that will become a part of our comprehensive plan work as we move forward. Also, just inside of Scott County, there's the Minnesota River Valley State Trail. And again, our comprehensive plan will make a connection. And today, physically, there is a connection to that system from Chaska. It reaches over into Scott County along Highway 41, and that's a paved trail network that, again, connects not only counties but connects our regional system. So from Scott County, if you will, you can utilize the Minnesota River Valley Trail, get into Carver County, and if you want to go all the way to Hopkins and points further to the east, you certainly can.
Thank you. The problem here is you can only mention a couple of ways to get out of the metro into the trail system that DNR has. And so we don't have that sharing, and it would be good economic development for outside of the metro area for sure, because folks in the metro would like to get out, and they don't necessarily get out by car anymore. They get out by bike. And similarly, to have folks be able to come in. So having just a couple connections does not seem to me to work for the long term, that we do need to be thinking about those connections. I mean, I don't see one to the south. I know there is one to the north, but that's just, that doesn't seem right. So it's something I'm hoping goes up on your radar screen.
Absolutely. Mr. Mullen.
Chair Fabian, Representative Wagenius, the legislature really did encourage the Minnesota DNR Metropolitan Council and the 10 implementing agencies in the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails system to work together better. And there's been concerted efforts, and I can just tell you that's going better than it has. And the connections that you're speaking of are ones that I know there's a lot more potential to do better and to do more, but that those conversations are going, and my hope is that it will result in a network of trail system across Minnesota, because I do believe what you said earlier, that the experiences that Minnesotans have in the Metropolitan Regional Park System are often a gateway experience to going to state parks and even national parks and trails. So that's a connection that we're thinking about and that we want to further explore.
Thank you. Just real quickly,
I've got three grandchildren now in the metro area, and so if I load up my ATVs and bring them down, do I have some ATV trail opportunities in the Met Council Regional Parks?
Chair Fabian, I'm thinking hard. Not currently in the Metropolitan Regional Park System. There are some snowmobile opportunities in some of our parks.
Thank you. Anything else, members? Okay, we have a session today at 10 o'clock, just so you know that. And tomorrow we've got a couple of bills up and so forth. Questions? Okay. Okay, with that then, we're adjourned.